Long live the tribe of fatherless girls. Your name is Kinky Chinky, they say to me, these girls, as they drag on their parliament lights. Harley and Nell, all ass and stomach and lip gloss and tongue rings, they don't belong here at this party, though all of us want them. This is the first time I've been invited and I came here alone. This is the beginning of a story, a new one. This is me without a father or a mother or a best friend, a boat parade bash in a mansion overlooking the Intercoastal, 2003. I'm a sophomore, 15 years old, my knees cratered and red from sucking off a boy named Brandon in somebody else's closet. Kinky Chinky, it suits you. Another sophomore named Craig hosts this party every year around Christmas, where the richest kids in our class watch America's finest yacht split black water like a zipper. Nobody misses Craig's parties because they have the best drugs and shelves full of blue-colored booze. At least a handful of our class always ends up fucking in a closet or in Craig's hot tub or on the floor of a bedroom, but usually I only hear about it. Harley and Nell corner me in the billiard room of Craig's house. The lights are dim, Genuine's In Those Jeans playing from somewhere downstairs. This is where they stand, smoking, staring at my knees. Brandon Friedman, really? He's got the body of a fridge. Harley Pelletier and Nell Roman don't go to our school. They're childhood friends of Craig's. Their parents have done business with his parents. I knew Harley once, before. She went to our middle school for 1 year before moving south to Davie. She was sweet then, with hair like fondue chocolate down to her waist, light oval eyes, just like Adriana Lima. Clear braces that somehow never yellowed. She and I spilled chemicals into the mouths of beakers in our sixth grade science class. I've never met a chink before, she said to me once, lovingly, holding a scalpel in her gloved hand, a formaldehyde softened frog between us. Harley and Nell don't look like any other girls at our school, and the boys at this party can tell. Harley has a short bob haircut now, body of a blade, with nose freckles and a silver tongue ring stud that glints when she speaks to you. Everybody calls her Lips, and she seems embarrassed by the nickname. These fish lips? Gross. But we can all tell she knows their DSL appeal. It's the way she puckers them when she's thinking, the way she wraps them around a bottle between every sip. Nell is more understated. She barely wears makeup. She doesn't need it. And her tan skin glows as if lit up from the inside. She has deep auburn hair, hips and breasts, a tongue ring with prickly neon strings sprouting out of it like a sea creature. She calls this her cushy ball. Better blowies with this, she says. Drives men crazy. Tonight, she wears a neon green Von Dutch trucker hat, which she turns backward and forward depending on which boy is flirting with her and how much she likes it. You're so cute, Nell tells me. Is your hair really that thick, or do you have extensions? No, she's really Chinese, says Harley. It was the same in middle school. You don't even look that Asian, says Nell. You're actually really pretty, says Harley. The two of them have a way of picking up each other's sentences in quick succession. You look, like, really sad, though, says Nell. Why Brandon? You're hotter than that. Because he asked me to, I shrug. The truth? Clarissa recently spent the night with the first boy I ever thought could be a real boyfriend, the first boy I thought I loved. Eric was his name. He had big, friendly ears that he pinned back with cosmetic surgery a couple of years ago for his 13th birthday, bar and bat mitzvah year, the same year everybody but me gets their face and body fixed. I met him at Jewish summer camp, and he wrote me a love ballad called Jazzy Girl, which he sang as he dipped me across a keyboard for a kiss in the camp computer lab. Next thing I heard, Clarissa lost her V-card to Eric. The two of them tell me they only dry-humped, but still, I cry into my mattress, I cry on the phone to my father, I cry to Ashanti, I cry off 15 pounds. I swear I will never speak to Eric or Clarissa again. I hope you two get AIDS. But many years later, when Eric takes his life in a motel room in upstate New York, Clarissa will be the first person I call. I correct myself. I'm on the rebound. My best friend fucked my boyfriend. Once a fat bitch, always a fat bitch, I guess. Burn, they both scream, Let's get you schwasted. Harley and Nell bring me a large glass of Red Bull and vodka. It's weird to swish the vodka in my mouth, something as familiar to me as water, but somehow new, like this, when it's mine. The three of us drink this combination all night, their fingers clinking the ice around in the glass. We cuddle up in Craig's bed as the boats drag by. The later it gets, the more I feel understood by these girls. They stroke my hair, my thighs. They move their hands up my shirt and slowly tickle my stomach. Such a sick bod. Thanks, it's the mono. And I don't mind this. For the first time in years, I don't mind being touched. The caffeine from the Red Bull has my heart feeling huge, and my lips are numb and wet, and I am biting them and pinching them to feel more like Harley, and I have never been drunk before. I have never seen yacht lights flashing through windows. I have never seen girls' faces this close up to mine, talking. Craig takes out a disposable camera and tells the three of us to pose. He flashes the camera while we smile together in bed, on the floor, in the baby crib of his guest room. Our faces are flushed, and we're holding hands in every picture. Nell's green hat, we all took turns wearing it. I find the photos 12 years later, each photo scissored out in the shape of a heart. On the back of one are words, though I cannot remember who wrote them or when. They read, "Best friends forever." I am a new person after our school's holiday break. I don't care about any kids in my grade. I continue ignoring Clarissa. I start lining my lips with dark lip pencils to make them look bigger. Harley and Nell have decided to adopt me. File the paperwork, it's official. And they pick me up from school at 3:30 on the days I show. Harley is 16 now, older than me and Nell, and she drives like a maniac. She weaves around other cars on I-95, plays chicken in the wrong lanes, uses turbo. She's been driving crazy since years before she got her license. Nell tells me that, but none of this matters to us. The way we see it, Harley is beautiful and she can legally drive, and that's the end of it. From my school, we go straight to Harley's house. Her mother usually stays at her boyfriend's apartment, but sometimes she's passed out on the couch with a half-drunk glass and a bottle of nasal spray. Her father lives somewhere out west. Harley's room feels so grown up, with navy blue walls, clicking beaded streamers at her doorway, an open shower in the middle of her room, a mattress on the floor. My room at home is still pink with porcelain dolls and twinkle lights lining the perimeter, but I don't tell them this. Tonight, we're going to a bonfire party off Dixie Highway called The Circus. Public school kids, bass music. Nell stands at the bathroom mirror smudging on charcoal liner, a cigarette bit between her teeth. In my memories of Nell, there's never a moment she is not smoking. "Fuck, it's making me water," she says, fanning the smoke from her eyes. "You ever smoke before, Chinky?" Harley asks me. The two of us are sitting on the love seat in her room. "Why are you always staring at her?"
"I haven't."
"Ugh, you are such a Martian." "I'll try it," I say. "I mean, I love the way they smell." "It's nice out. Let's go outside." The three of us sit on the wood planks of Harley's deck, palm trees whistling. A street light glows close, and our eyes are gold with it. "We like cloves," says Nell. "Bally highs. They taste like doped out candy." Harley puts one between my lips. "Suck," she says, lighting it. I hold the thick flavor in my mouth. I switch between trying to breathe through my mouth and my nose. I don't know how to inhale, but it's true. I do taste the bright sugar. Nell and Harley exhale the smoke from their nostrils in teapot streams. "Let it out of your nose. That's how you know you're doing it right." I listen to the paper crackle between my teeth. The sound is amplified in my head, and I pretend that each crackle is a strand of my brain dying out. "Do you have parents?" I ask Nell. "I mean, how do you come here every night?" "My mom's always up my ass," she says. But Harley's mom covers for me on the phone, says we're watching movies or doing math problems or something. My sister's in college. "And your parents let you?" "Her dad's dead," says Harley, "if that's what you're trying to ask." Nell doesn't look at either one of us when Harley says this. She takes a longer drag, snap cracks her knuckles against her knees.
Well, I've always wanted a sister, I say. So that's cool.
And what about you, shoe princess? Nell says. Don't you spend a lot of money on prep to be skipping every day?
My dad moved to New York last year, I say, for the business. And my mom doesn't give a shit about school.
Isn't your whole family in prison or something, chilling with Martha Stewart?
Harley jabs Nell with an elbow. Rude.
What? Nell says. I mean, it's on the frickin' news.
It's cool, I say. The prison thing.
What'd they do again?
Different stuff. Mostly money.
Do you miss them?
Nah.
Well, we're your sisters now, says Harley. Nell nods. Like blood.
At the bonfire, the three of us sip Coronas and sway our hips to Biggie Smalls. Bitches, I like 'em brainless, guns, I like 'em stainless, thumping out of a boombox. We're in the middle of a parking lot behind a block of abandoned warehouses near a great stretch of trees, and the fire is piled high with tires and cardboard boxes fluttering inside a metal trash can. Groups of older kids laugh around the orange sparks, sucking on cigarettes, kissing. A senior from Nell's public school walks over to us and wraps his arms around her waist. Hey, Pimtress, you smoking tonight? His name's Monty, Harley whispers to me. He's in love with Nell and he's always got green. Monty plucks a cigarette out from behind his ear. It looks like it's been wrapped with a brown paper bag.
That a joint? I ask. I don't recognize this. The only joints I've ever seen are my mother's, and those are always wrapped white.
A blunt, says Monty. He chuckles at me. Where'd you find this girl?
She's our prep school tropical princess, says Harley. Ain't she cute?
Monty lights the blunt and takes it in, passing it over to Nell, who passes it over to Harley.
I'm assuming you're a weed virgin, too, she asks.
I nod.
Open your mouth, she says.
Harley sucks the blunt until the burning worm almost reaches her nails. Before I know what's happening, she presses her mouth to mine, exhaling the smoke down my throat. I hold her by the back of her head. I hold her right there. I don't want our faces to part.
Relax, Les, she says, pulling away.
Suck it in. We circle this blunt, and then another, several more times. My tongue feels like a pine cone. Everything I say ticks around my head like a film projector, and I can't tell if the words are coming out now, or if they came out 15 minutes ago, or if I haven't even said them yet.
Look at Chinky's eyes, says Nell. Now you can actually tell she's Asian.
Why do you both say white girl shit like that, I say, surprising myself.
Excuse me, I am 1/8 Bolivian, says Harley. I laugh so hard at this that a long string of drool drips down to the gravel. The drool looks bedazzled to me with the bonfire behind it. Slow motion. I wonder if my mother feels like this all the time. If my father did before rehab. In this moment, I think I understand drugs and booze and the big deal about them. I feel infinite here with these girls, strong, like either one of them could choke me out or yank fistfuls of my hair, and I would love it. It'd be the feel-good burn of a loose tooth you can't stop tonguing, a thoroughbred pounding beneath you on a track, those flashes of life when your own body surprises you with no more ache, no more tenderness. I think, this is why they like it, Mom and Dad. This is why they don't come back to themselves. And I feel connected to them in places I've never felt before. I'm their daughter. In what feels like seconds or maybe hours, another man approaches us. He's tall, with high spiked hair. For a moment, I wonder if he's a talking tree. Go away, Paul, Nell says, and the words tunnel out. And then another man, short, bald, granite eyes. His name, someone says, is Tonka. I hear more words in no particular order. Paul, no, my girl, fucking kill you, Tonka, jump him, Nell, my girl, Paul, fucked her, chicken head, when, before Monty and Paul and Tonka begin swinging their arms and smashing their glass bottles, and Monty's face is pressed against the asphalt beneath a sneaker. I think, this is sexy. In what feels like seconds or maybe minutes, the blue of sirens whirls in my eyes,
Anil says, run, run, and the trees turn to coral. We're all underwater, and my body is pulled into Harley's sinking car before we speed off, looking for Monty. He limps out of the woods to the street, bloodied pulp of a body in Harley's headlights. Nell and I let him lie across our laps as we drive him to the hospital, Nell kissing his forehead, smoothing his hair back with the wet black of his blood. Smashed ruby of a boy, all those cut open places. It was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. I have this problem, Harley screams from her bathroom toilet. I hate wiping my own ass. It's true, Nell says. Nell's flipping through a beauty magazine on Harley's bed, peeling open the pockets of sample lipsticks and perfumes between the pages. She sniffs the spine. Are you shitting me? I ask, reaching for the joke. I just can't, Harley says. I don't understand. Chinky, can you come and wipe my ass for me, please? I look at Nell. Is she serious? She shrugs. The lips beckon. In the bathroom, Harley extends her arm with a wad of toilet paper pinched between her nails, her toes pointed inward like a toddler on the aquamarine tiles. Be my best friend, will you? There's a glittering viciousness to Harley Pelletier when she wants something. The slight cock of her face to the left, the bend of her pupils as they gaze up at you at just the right angle. A look that says, love me, even when I'm fucking with you, even when I'm not, prove it. But I'd do anything. That's the problem with me. It still is. I never even pretend to hesitate. There are nights without parties sometimes. On these nights, we pull on sweatshirts and yank off the top of my father's Navy convertible, which we've decided to take as our own, just until he comes back. We drive around until the sun bulges out of the sea, back and forth along A1A, Usher or Juvenile or Bubba Sparks on the speakers. The heat blasts in streams against the thick, wet, cool of Florida winter, and we call it hot fudge Sunday driving. I haven't seen my father in several months. He flies down to northern Florida every weekend to see my uncle in prison, but he does not make the full trip to see me. He says it's because my mother is using, and seeing her high is triggering to him in his sobriety. When my father does not visit, my mother uses more. She says his not loving us is triggering to her and her sobriety. In my father's car, that corrugated edge of fear and desire I can't stop touching. What if we all get found out? What if I get sent away to live in the system? Could the girls come with me? Would they? The music thumps in our stomachs and we never talk much. We just smoke and smoke until our throats burn our voices out. When this happens, Nell and I plug one nostril with a finger and put the filter into the other nostril. We snort the cigarettes as hard as we can until our vision curls and collapses like a wave. Long live our tribe of fatherless girls, Nell says. Wind whip of hair stinging our faces. Daybreak warbling from bird-blackened trees. Both girls like to kiss me with their tongue rings. They like the way guys look at us when they do this. When they take the new girl's face in their hands and kiss me hard and sloppy, running their fingers through my hair, letting me tug at their barbells with my teeth. Have you met our kinky chinky? Fucking freaks, men say, in the best way possible. I love it when they kiss me too, especially Nell. I position my face next to her face as often as possible, as close as I can, but none of this has to do with the men around us or what they think. Pervs, we say, once we get home to Harley's house in the mornings, peeling off our plaid miniskirts, our studded belts. Disgusting needle-dicked pervs. But we like pervs. We're good with them. Pervs get us whatever we want if we wear the right clothes, if we act stupid enough. We pick up pervs in downtown Fort Lauderdale, on the strip, on the beach, outside the Primanti Brothers pizza shop, at lot parties. The pervs must be old enough to buy us alcohol and scary enough to make the whole experience worth it. One night, we meet a drug dealer perv named Josh outside a downtown tattoo shop. He looks about 35, with a chinstrap goatee and barely any hair on top. We decide that Josh will do anything for us, so long as we love up on one another, so long as we let him tell us what to do and follow his directions. Josh likes me most because I'm the shy one, and because I'm a virgin. He wears a gold ring with his name on it, a little diamond inside the O. He cradles my face in his giant jeweled hand and puts his tongue in my mouth. "I'll let you wear this ring as long as I own you," he says, "as long as I can call you my little bitch." I wear his ring on my thumb with great pride, knowing I belong to someone. At school, everybody stares at the ring, the glittering Josh. There are several Joshes at school, but no one can place where this one came from. Not a Goldberg or Greenberg or Rothblatt. This other kind of Josh. Josh likes to take us drag racing at night. The three of us are so drunk in the back seat, we barely ever look at the speedometer the way he would like us to. We are never impressed with Josh or his car. We just sit on each other's laps, kissing, making jokes about dying together in a crash, till death do us part. "How about I get you girls some Incredible Hulk?" he says one night, when he's tired of this. We usually drink Malibu with orange soda, and the sound of a new drink with a muscular name has us intrigued. Josh stops at a liquor store, picks up a bottle of Hennessy and a mystical-looking bottle of milky blue liquor. "Rub it and a genie will come out," he says. The next stop we make is at 7-Eleven. Josh brings us 3 Big Gulp cups full of ice. He pours and mixes the 2 liquor bottles in the cups until we each have our own full bucket-sized cups of liquid. It's a dirty swimming pool color, muddy. "Careful, the Hulk's vicious." "Do you even have a job?" we ask. "Do you go to college or something?" "I go to the College of Hard Knocks USA," he says. We drink the bittersweet through our straws. Harley and Nell stick their monster-colored tongues out for Josh above the center console of the car. "Please?" And he drops white pills of Xanax on them. "Good girls." "I love bars," Harley says. "You're missing out, Kinky Chinky. Pills give you wings." Josh drives us down to Miami. We have never seen it before, at night, lit up and strobing. We ask to stop in a pizza parlor to pee. Inside my stall, the walls begin to drip down around me. I finished my Incredible Hulk, and my feet feel like they're on a treadmill, rolling away. My hands reach for anything to hold onto so that I can stand up, or sit down, or keep my balance somewhere in between. The green starts bursting out of me. I vomit on my bare legs, the floor, the toilet seat. I hear somebody else doing the same, a gagging chorus. The heels of our shoes slip through it, leaving squiggled trails of tile white. The three of us walk out of the parlor onto the strip, goopy liquid running from our eyes, our mouths, down our chins. Josh is gone. I crawl down the sidewalk, spewing more green into the gutters. We stumble over one another and grip our shoes by the straps. The girls hold my hair. "I love you. I love you. I love you too." None of us can remember how we ever got home. "It was suicide," Nell tells me. Nell's father committed suicide 2 years ago. She was at a friend's house watching a movie when it happened. Her mother was out shopping, buying Nell's older sister a prom dress. Her dad called the friend's house line. "Can I pick you up?" he said to Nell. "Are you ready? I'll come." "I'm busy right now. We just got to the good part. Can you wait until later?" He was found swinging in the garage, a strappy piece of workout equipment squeezed around his neck. His deep plum skin on a hospital gurney. Nell knew it before it was declared. She talks about this only once, and then tells me to forget it. "Doesn't matter anymore," she says. "That was then. But he was her father." We go back to Craig's house for another party. Harley and I are lying belly down on Craig's bed as a room full of people look at my new tattoo. Today I went to a tattoo parlor in East Boca and asked for a Hawaiian beach scene on my lower back. "Something scenic," I said. "Or maybe Bob Marley lyrics. Artist choice." What I got was a cartoon palm tree right above my crack, with some sway marks around it. Neon waves and a plumeria flower float around the tree, a few red clouds, the whole scene beaded with hardened blood. "Did it hurt, they say? Did it tickle?" "Looks like a flaming meatball," says Craig. "Wasn't so bad," I say, even though I cried the whole hour that warm, vibrating needle thrummed through my skin, until the man with plugs in his face said, "Check it out in the mirror, hula hula girl." Harley is kicking her legs, annoyed. "It's just a tat," she says. "Big fucking whoop." Ephraim shows up in his new Phantom Rolls Royce, a birthday present. He stands in the doorway of Craig's bedroom and spins the keys around his pointer finger. "Anyone want to go for a ride? Mink interior." "How big's your exhaust pipe, or stick shift?" Harley asks him. "Big." Harley squeezes my hand, presses her lips to my ear. "Watch this." "That stick," she says. "Want to watch us pull our skirts up and fuck it?" "My father doesn't live out west," Harley tells me one day. "He lives in Miami." "The Bolivian?" I ask. "He's 15 minutes away?" "Yeah," she says, "but that doesn't mean I see any of him." "What's his name?" "Doesn't matter." This confession comes the same week Harley's mom and boyfriend argue in her living room all night. Harley's mom began lighting matches, flicking them onto furniture, cushions, trying to burn the house down. "Fry, motherfucker," before the boyfriend dragged the hose inside. The fight was over which television show they would watch. We called the police and left in our pajamas before anybody got there. The girls don't typically come to my house, but today, after school, I need to stop by and pick up more clothes. It's my turn to contribute to our shared collection. We've all dropped down a couple of sizes since we met, since we don't really eat, and what I do eat are clenbuterol hydrochloride horse respiratory pills, the kind Calorie Valerie, a girl at my school, gets from her mother. We order the pills on the internet using my parents' credit cards. Inside, my own mother is sitting at the dining room table with all the lights off. She's spilling candle wax onto a sheet of paper and onto the surface of the table and onto her hands. "Look," she says, holding her palms out to us. She did dry out in North Carolina years ago. She shook it out, let the fever take over. On the worst days, her body let out a slime that I wiped from her skin in a circular motion. I changed the sheets, massaged her limbs. After that, we had a good span of time together, the three of us, mom, dad, and child. But last summer, before school one morning, my mother slipped in the shower and shattered her teeth, her jaw. The doctor prescribed pills for the pain, for the surgeries and wires and caps. Soon after, more doctors, more scripts. When I think about my parents, these are still the days that ache most. Internet prescription mills calling our house. My father screaming into the phone, "One more pill and I'll fucking end you," slamming the receiver into the wall. Just last year, there had been so much hope for us. But then the scripts, the phone calls, the clicks of those locked bathroom doors. My uncle got caught soon after, that Wolf of Wall Street business. So did my father's friends. My father didn't go to prison. He went to New York instead. My mother stayed here with me. "Let's go," I say. I collect my clothes in a plastic Walgreens bag and slam the door on our way out. In the driver's seat, I pull the top down. Harley's taught me enough about driving to get us around, though she still has to help me with directions sometimes. There's no greater thrill than taking I-95 in my father's car, speeding, hoping for the scream of sirens. Before I pull out of the horseshoe driveway, another car pulls in behind us. A black, cubic car, spinning rims of chrome on the tires, tinted windows. A man in a gray suit gets out of the car and begins walking toward us. He walks with a slight limp. I recognize him immediately from years ago. He was in my living room with cousin Cindy. She always calls him Boca Brad, the richest dealer in the South. Nell sitting behind me in the car and lowers her sunglasses down her nose. "What's up, hot stuff?" "Don't," I say. Boca Brad smacks his gum between his teeth. His cologne carries on the humidity and nips in my throat. He bends down to see Nell a little bit closer. "Here to see her mom," he says, pointing at me. "But maybe I'm really here to see you." He reaches out his hand and cups her under the chin, his fingers digging into her cheeks. I have seen men touch Nell for all the months I have known her, and I will see them do it again and again in the months after this moment. But I have never seen Nell truly scared or frightened of anything like she is right now, still as an animal in crosshairs, like she's just seen something too grown up for us to understand yet. Was it his smell, the dig of his nails, the way he held her gaze? Later, she'll tell me she couldn't be sure, but there was something, she said, that kind of woman intuition one hears about. It came ringing in. "Drive," she says, swatting the man's hand away. My father is flying my mother up to New York for a visit. I begged him on the phone. "Daddy, she needs you. She needs this. She needs help. I want my mother back. I want her grilled ham and cheese sandwiches and her watercolor paints and her half-remembered, half-imagined stories. I want the smell of her, like gardenias. I want everything about her. I want her to live. But I also know that sobriety will mean I'll have to go to school again. I'll have to give the credit cards back. I'll have to stay home and put my dishes away, and I won't get to drive my father's car. I won't wake up under a highway overpass anymore, or beside a motel pool, or on the beach with horseshoe crab shells in my hair and men I don't know. Most of all, I know if I have a mother, I can't keep the girls." We are curled up in Harley's bed like cats when I get the call. "She's leaving," I say. "My dad says she's going to New York." "How long?" "Whoever knows," I shrug. "What should we do with your crib to ourselves?" Harley wants to know. "We could throw a party," I say. "A themed party?" Nell asks. "Please, I love themes. I slay at themes." It takes us 3 hours to drive to the Aventura Mall and find perfect sets of coordinating lingerie. In Hollywood, we pick up handcuffs, whips, paddles, and various colors and sizes of dildos. We drive to my house and get dressed. Harley's playing the role of Jenna Jameson tonight, a cloud of blonde wig, a white and blue garter belt, silver glitter, like an angel. Nell is playing Brianna Banks, with a black lace-up corset and smolder eyes. I'm playing the only Asian porn star we know, Kobe Tai. I wear fishnets, a lavender bustier, and several sets of handcuffs attached to my garter belt. Because Harley and Nell have tits and I do not, the girls help me triple up bras beneath my bustier, pulling my skin up and over it. We paste on thick rows of eyelashes and press on several inches of acrylic nails. We decorate my house with the dildos. We suction them onto the pool table, the mantelpiece. We leave small ones in the bar to be used as drink stirrers. By 9 p.m., almost 100 people arrive at our porn star party. Public and private school kids, a couple dealers we know, the older boyfriends of girls in our grade. Clarissa shows up in a white and pink number, and Nell calls her a troll, tells her to leave me alone. Beth shows up fully clothed. "What are you, a pilgrim?" before Harley convinces her to change in my room. Several Ron Jeremys appear shirtless, with plungers, got a leak, and other girls arrive in thongs, nipple tassels, capes, and extra padded push-ups. Harley, Nell, and I take every shot we're given. Red Bull and Jägermeister, lemon drops, cock-sucking cowboys with cream. We lie down on my pool table and begin to kiss one another while the boys and men cheer us on. Cousin Cindy once asked me, "What do you think love really is?" "I think it's being able to kiss someone whenever you want," I said. I can kiss Nell whenever I want, and I do. The other girls at the party roll their eyes, move to the corner of the room. "Sluts," they say. A few of the boys kick off their Air Force Ones and stand on top of the pool table. They begin crip walking around our bodies, a dance some of them like to do when the hip-hop hits come on. Tonight, Nell is wearing her door knocker tongue ring, my favorite, a heavy hoop of metal that I lift with my tongue. The music gets louder before it turns off. "Somebody's ringing. Somebody's here. Go get it, Kinky Chinky." When I opened the door, two cops seesaw their flashlights in my eyes. "Party?" they ask. "What's it to you?" My vision bloats their bodies. I try to snap into focus. "You look pretty young, young lady," says one of the cop heads. Interested, I think. "If you think you're gonna arrest me," I say, "I'm gonna have to arrest you first." I take the handcuffs off my garter belt and move toward them, trying to clink the metal rings around one of their wrists. The cops back up. I fall on the pavement and my knee begins to bleed through my fishnets. "Look what you did to my outfit," I say. Rather than evict anyone from the party, the cops declare a lockdown. This means they check all the exits, move us to the center of the room, and take a head count. They write down names and schools. They want us all to call our parents and explain what we've done, but we're all slurring, laughing, calling Pizza Hut delivery instead. They call my parents. "We've got about 100 kids here in their underwear," before shaking their heads. "Well, you better fly back from New York because we need a guardian." "I've got a guardian," I say, twisting a strand of bubblegum around my nail. I call my Aunt Trista, Uncle Kai's wife, who's new to the family, in the neighborhood. "I'm in a jam, Auntie Trista." 15 minutes later, Aunt Trista comes dressed for the theme. A black glittering corset, a leather miniskirt with two slits up the thighs. "I'm the guardian angel," she says, shooing the cops out the door. When she locks it behind them, she turns to the rest of us, sitting in a circle like we're playing duck, duck, goose. "Now," she says, "who wants to get your guardian a goddamn drink?" They left. Harley moved to New York that spring to make it in acting, to find the right light for her face. She gave herself a show name, and we spoke on the phone a couple of times a year until we didn't. I wish I could say our goodbye was difficult, but something inside me, that gnarled knot of ass-wiping girl love, was relieved. These days, I watch her on a television drama in which she plays the life-saving teacher inspiring inner-city students to read books and dream big. She's a stranger now, a married woman. Older, slighter, that upward gaze. Nell was picked up in the middle of the night by a Catholic couple in matching blue polo shirts. Her mother waited in the neighbor's apartment while they took her daughter, kicking and squalling. The couple handcuffed Nell in her pajamas and carried her into a PT Cruiser, drove her to live in a reform school for girls in rural North Carolina. Nell would find a job in a ski lodge up there in the mountains and meet a gang of cowboys to buy her cigarettes, send and receive her letters. This is what she tells me now, anyway. We never wrote to each other. I got my driver's license that summer. I was left with my mother, with those piles and piles of clothes, the empty wrappers of horse pills, left with a dull hammering at my temples when I ran out of cigarettes and didn't know how to get them. At night, I drove along Deerfield Beach and waited for that fullness in my ears, those voices deep and melodic as a gospel as we crawled through the streets of Miami looking for somebody, anybody. I love you. I love you. I love you too, alone in my father's convertible. He bought me a new car, fancier, the month before he died. I want the old one back. Dear tribes of fatherless girls, I'm still here.